Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And for those of you who weren't with us yesterday, and even those who were, as you might imagine, we spent the day talking about Andrew Breitbart, his life, his legacy with his family, and certainly his contributions to the conservative cause. One martini will still be devoted to that story today, and some of you might be a little bit surprised to find out that it's the good martini. Obviously, any of us who could, and none of us can, if we could go back and change what happened early Thursday morning, we would. But one of the things that developed out of reaction to Andrew Breitbart's death is, Jim, you pointed this out very well in the Morning Jolt on Friday, that different aspects of the conservative movement who, during a very contentious primary season, had gotten, well, more than a little bit fractious. You see it on Twitter a lot with very sharp comments between supporters of the different sides. A lot of people getting to the point where anything other than their guy is just absolutely intolerable. We saw a coming together of conservatives who were reminded that they have a whole lot more in common politically than they don't. And hopefully it bands us together throughout this campaign season and well beyond.
Yeah, it was kind of the silver lining to a very dark cloud was that this has been a long and tough and very divided primary. The Mitt folks really can't believe that anybody would prefer Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich or Ron Paul, and I think it's vice versa and you know, applicable to each one of the candidate supporters. You have yourself interacting with folks on the right who you're used to politically agreeing with and who suddenly you're getting criticism from folks you didn't expect to. You're finding yourself being very vociferous in your opposition to other folks, and everybody just kind of like, you know, what happened? And then this awful event happens, and suddenly everybody's feeling the exact same thing. Everyone is feeling sorrow and grief and disbelief and shock and this deep admiration for Andrew Breitbart and what he did with his all too short 43 years in his life. And even if you didn't agree with every decision Andrew Breitbart made, I think you just look at the totality of his life and his work and say, wow, this guy packed so much into 43 years. And it's kind of interesting how many people say, my goodness, he inspired us. That you want to emulate his energy, his drive, his passion, his sense of humor, his sense of fun, all of these things that he did. So it was just kind of the warmer part of my Twitter feed yesterday and emails, people saying, you know, God, you know, I just feel everybody feels like we conservatives, you know, and the right as a whole maybe just needed a big group hug. And perhaps yesterday kind of provided that sense of, hey, you know, if somebody, one of these four guys is not my preferred candidate, hey, I'll deal with that later. Okay, let's get a Republican in the White House. Then we can fight with him over all of these things. But right now there is a president in the White House who's opposed to 99.9, no Herman Cain pun intended. He opposes almost everything we stand for. He's running this country to the ground. Unemployment has barely shrunk at all. Gas prices are hitting $5 a gallon. The housing market's still, I mean, he has failed from top to bottom. Everyone who was dancing on the grave of Andrew Breitbart yesterday voted for Barack Obama. Every single one of them is completely dedicated to make sure he stays in there because this is good enough for them and this is the kind of country they live in. And if that doesn't get a fire started within you, I don't know what does. And I know that I feel a little bit different today. I didn't even necessarily expect to approach the world with this attitude today. But I'm sensing it in a lot of other people and a lot of other people. Maybe the other right kind of needed this, that a gauntlet has been thrown down. And I don't know if you want to, you know, be as cliched as to say, let's go out there and win this for Andrew or anything. But just observing that, like, this was a, you know, if the left wants to fight on these terms, we are ready to match them and we are ready to beat them. And we want them to feel a different sorrow than the sorrow we felt yesterday. We want them to just feel the sorrow, I would argue the milder sorrow, of defeat, not loss.
Yeah, the coming together certainly was cathartic. Super Tuesday is on Tuesday, so we'll see how long this lasts and what the attitudes are in a few days from now when the shock wears off. But it's definitely a good reminder, and hopefully once there is a consensus nominee, that there actually will be that consensus. But as Breitbart would want, the fight goes on. Let's go to martini number two now, Jim. And you mentioned it in the passing about what the president has failed at. And the list is very long, as you indicated. And one of them, of course, is the one that's dominating the headlines a lot lately. And that's the rising price of gasoline. I think the average price for a regular unleaded is now in the mid-370s. And that was just yesterday. It's probably gone up a couple cents at least since then. There's still really no explanation from the White House about how to deal with this. The president basically punted last week by saying there is no silver bullet, mocked the idea of $2 gas. And the more depressing part of this martini is that this administration doesn't even seem to want them to come down. And we've chronicled in the past about how they actually want them to rise, so dependence on renewable energies will somehow rise, even though they're not clearly sufficient to carry the load. But here's Secretary Chu, Stephen Chu, the Energy Secretary, testifying before Congress and just saying it point blank.
Is the overall goal to get our price?
No, the overall goal is to decrease our dependency on oil, to build and strengthen our economy, and to decrease our dependency on oil.
So we need to reduce our dependency on oil and reduce our dependency on oil, Jim. Apparently, he didn't think that message was clear enough the first time, but this is an administration that is standing its ground on having absolutely no policy.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-boggling. And I don't know if this suggests that everyone on Team Obama is way too confident about their prospects for re-election, or that they have a very principled belief that the price of gasoline should be higher because that will get us to a carbon-free economy someday or some such nonsense like that. Look, Obama's plan to deal with high gas prices is to take away tax incentives for oil companies. Now, these tax incentives are there to help them deduct a portion of the costs for investment, to reduce the expenses of certain drilling and development costs, certain types of oil recovery method, basically things that are in the tax code to help oil companies produce oil, which is their job. Obama wants to take that away, and that's how he thinks he's going to bring down prices. Anybody with a lick of economic sense can say, wait a minute, if you make this whole process more expensive, you're going to make the price of gas more expensive. I am marveling that he went up to New Hampshire yesterday, gave this speech, and the audience didn't boo. Because if you think about what he's doing, he's basically saying, we need to fix our problem by making gas more expensive. And he has said in the past that energy prices will necessarily skyrocket in comments like that. Barack Obama has very divided views on increasing gas prices. And when it comes down, I think a good chunk of this comes down to the fact that, look, everything we are talking about to him is theoretical. He does not pay for his own gas. If gas is $3 a gallon, $4 a gallon, or $5 a gallon, it makes absolutely no impact on the daily life of Barack Obama. He doesn't pay for his own gas. And even if he did, he's wealthy enough so he would never have to worry about such things. So we're talking about policies, and this applies to a great number of federal policies that really have absolutely no tangible impact on his life. He approaches governing the way a lot of us play a game like The Sims, Greg. In other words, this is all theoretical to him. This is all something that's kind of he can see it and he can tweak it and he can fiddle with it. But in the end, it doesn't really affect his life. Well, for us, it does affect our lives. I filled up my car yesterday. It cost me $50.
Right.
This eats into people's take-home pay. This eats into people's disposable income. And so the idea. Rick Santorum got a lot of grief earlier this week because he said that high gas prices caused the recession in 2008. I think that is probably an overstatement of things. I think you can't just mitigate the housing bubble bursting and the collapse of Lehman, et cetera, et cetera. But all things considered, $4 a gallon gas and $5 a gallon gas is not healthy for an economy because it ends up eating up people's resources that they would like to spend on other things, everything from groceries to vacations to disposable income to large purchases to paying down debt, all kinds of other stuff. It is, everyone feels the squeeze. And I think also, as I've discussed in past martinis, people drive around and they see gas prices. And in a previous martini, we talked about the price of gas going up 10 cents a gallon during an ABC news report that was on for like 2 minutes or something. People see that, and I think there's a very intense psychological effect of this. And so whether or not the state of the economy really is growing at a particular rate or really is shrinking at a particular rate, I think high gas prices are an enormous driver of economic anxiety. And so the fact that Barack Obama is not moving with all deliberate speed on this, and the fact that he's just kind of shrugging his shoulders and saying, well, there's no quick fixes, but algae, someday you'll have an algae-powered car, and that'll make everything better. Like, that's not a serious solution. And I think this kind of reveals a great deal about Barack Obama and the way he sees the world. And if the American people don't get rid of this, I will marvel at how much we have hurt ourselves with our bad decision making.
Absolutely. So, folks, make sure you inflate your tires. And if you just live closer to where you work so you could just walk there, wouldn't this problem just go away? Thank you very much.
Take a high-speed rail to your job, Greg. Get on that rail. It'll be built in a few years. Walk in the interim.
Well, as you may have heard, the president has now repeatedly, Jim, suggested that he's got 5 years left in his administration, basically showing how confident he is in his reelection, even though we've cited a number of polls showing that it's going to be close, even if he does win. And there's a good chance that the Republican nominee could defeat him in November. But I think we've discovered one of the many reasons for the president's grossly inflated ego. We heard a little bit of this at a Democratic fundraiser, one of many Democratic fundraisers that was held on Thursday night. Check this out.
Civil rights movement was hard. Winning the vote for women was hard. Making sure that workers had some basic protections was hard. Around the world, Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, what they did was hard. It takes time. It takes more than a single term. It takes more than a single president. It takes more than a single individual.
Jim, with apologies to Lloyd Benson, I've read about Nelson Mandela. I've read about Mahatma Gandhi. And, sir, you are neither. Those people were actually yearning for more freedom for their people. This president is apparently trying to cheer up discouraged liberals who don't think he's done enough to erode them. So the even attempt at a comparison with those figures is pretty galling, but not too surprising.
Remember, Americans, inflate your tires the way that President Mandela Gandhi inflates his ego. I just want to observe that, yes, it was very difficult for Nelson Mandela to accomplish what he did in his life, and the same for Gandhi. But, you know, I mean, it's not like Jimmy Carter had an easy time lousing up the country as much as he did. I mean, any leader faces difficulty. Martha Coakley did not have an easy time running badly against Scott Brown or trying to think of other. Rod Blagojevich did not have an easy time engaging the easiness or hardness is not what this is about. What it's about is the results, Mr. President. But it does say a great deal about himself. And, you know, earlier in the year, he had said that he thinks that his accomplishments of his first term go up against are the equal of anybody except for maybe three or four. And he said Washington, Lincoln, and it might have been FDR or something like that. So, a lot of people interpreted that as Obama thinking that he's already the fourth best president in American history. That's not literally what he said, but it just seems like a reasonable implication of it, that he thinks he's already amongst the all-time greats. So that's who we have, America. Make sure think hard before you sign up for another 4 years of this.
Ugh, he's the fourth best president this century, and we've only had three. That's that's where I come down on it. Jim, that's been a long week. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.